Okay, well, we might kick off. So welcome to Concurrent Session 6F, the Age Pension Means Test, Contorting Australian Retirement. I love the title. Thank you, gentlemen. So in America, Social Security is referred to as the third rail of American politics. And the third rail is a reference to the train system, where the third rail is the way to deliver electricity to the train. So, in other words, if you touch that third rail, you die. And at this Financial Services Forum, we've had plenty of people ready to grab that third rail with both hands, which is excellent, including our two authors today. First of all, Anthony Asher, who is the Associate Professor at New South Wales Business School. Anthony believes the actuarial profession fulfills its social role by creating financial security for people. Anthony's work has been divided between universities, APRA, and more conventional insurance and consulting roles. And the major themes of his current research are the development of appropriate post-retirement products, ethics and governance in the financial sector, so very timely, all three. And also John De Raven. John is a recently retired actuary who spent most of his actuarial career in the government's actuary's office, and also is the appointed actuary to Australian operations of two of the world's largest reinsurers. He's a fellow of the Financial Service Institute as well, and a CPA, and has won numerous prizes and awards. His current interests are in financial planning and investment, and he is an enthusiastic member of the Institute's Retirement Incomes Working Group. So please welcome your two speakers today.
Thanks so much, Darren, for the introduction. I see we have a smallish group here, but I honestly think this is really interesting material, and I hope you find it that way.
It's a quality group, though, John.
It is a quality group. It's not quantity that counts, it's quality. Okay, so what are we going to talk about today? We're going to start off with a bit of a history and description of the means tests that apply to someone who is eligible for the Australian Age Pension. Then we'll talk, in particular, we'll talk about the treatment in those means tests of the principal residence, which I think probably most of you know that is excluded from the means tests. We'll talk about integrating the age pension with superannuation. And then what we're going to do is we're going to calculate the effective marginal tax rates, or EMTRs. You'll see them represented in the slides. And by that we mean not so much something to do with tax, but we mean if you have an additional 100,000 of assets, how much do you lose in age pension in present value terms on a lifetime basis? Then having presented the results of those calculations of those effective marginal tax rates, we'll look at some of the consequences and some of the incentives that those EMTRs give to people who reach age pension eligibility age. We'll also evaluate the age pension criteria, the means tests, against some criteria that the Department of Social Security has suggested are appropriate criteria against which to evaluate the means tests. And finally, we talk about some possible remedies. So the current tests, probably most of you are reasonably familiar with the age pension means testing process. So I think you'd be aware from one of the earlier sessions of the conference that you've got both an income test and an assets test. And whichever of the two tests produces the lower age pension entitlement is the test that applies. And in the box on the right-hand side of the table there, we show all the current parameters. I think we've updated them. The parameters, the means testing amounts get updated in March and September and the age pension amounts get updated in March and September every year. In the box on the right-hand side, we've shown the current parameters. I think they're updated for the current March update. So you can see the amount of the single and couple pension. If you're single and you reach age pension age, which is currently, I think, 65 and a half, then you can have assets of up to $253,750 before the assets test starts to apply. If you're a couple, you can have $380,500. The next point that is a parameter that's mentioned on that slide is one that's particularly vicious if you're subject to the age pension assets test, because that 7.8% just there. Now that, until the 1st of January 2017, that was 3.9%. That's been doubled to 7.8% with effect from 1st of January. That's particularly vicious if you're subject to the assets test, and that's what underlies some of the calculated effective marginal tax rates that we'll be presenting to you a little bit later on. I won't go through the rest of the... Oh, well, maybe it's worth mentioning that if you're subject to the income test, so there's a certain amount of... Oh, sorry, no, maybe it's worth mentioning the deeming, the approach to deeming as well. So financial assets, instead of... they're taken in at the actual asset value in terms of the way the treatment in the assets test. But for the purposes of the income test, they're also included, but they're included not at the actual income that those assets produce, but at a deemed rate. And your financial assets are aggregated, and the first $50,200 for a single, $83,400 for a couple, is deemed to earn income at the rate of 1.75%. And assets in excess of those thresholds are deemed to earn 3.25%. So I think that's important to mention. There is a income test-free threshold for both singles and couples, which you can see there on the slide. And then if you have income in excess of those deeming thresholds, including deemed income from financial assets, then a taper rate of 50% applies to the age pension that's payable. So I think at this point I'll hand over to Anthony Asher to talk about the history of the means tests and take it from there.
Thanks, John. Just before we get onto that, the Centrelink has a 24-page form that you have to fill out twice a year if you have an age pension. My favourite question is question number 14, which says, what is the market value of your personal assets, e.g. hobby, gold coins or stamp collections, curtains, ovens, etc., whatever it is. I guess not. And you do get, the generous people in Centrelink may well phone you up and say, you haven't updated the value of your motor car recently. You know, is it really worth $12,000? Can we not write it down to 10 so that you get an extra couple of dollars on the age pension? But frankly, it's that particular element is just, it's a harassment of our older people. It's appalling. Okay, this is what it looks like historically. Well, this is my best bet of what it looks like historically. so this is 1909. The yellow dots are the minimum wage. Sorry, it really is quite too small here. This is the actual value of the age of the age pension. The dashed line here is the income test. This broken line here is the asset test. It didn't happen for a while. they have gone up with living standards. They've caught up the minimum wage. They've caught up the average wage a bit. So we treat our pensioners much better now than we did 100 years ago at Federation. It's not. I got an email from Jeff Dunsford this morning to say our pensioners treated too generously. I think we might be pushing it too far, but I think they are really enough to get pensioners beyond the sort of poverty. I don't think any old age people are in poverty, with one exception. We'll come on to, but it's the those who don't own houses and are not in social housing. But what I'd hoped to show is some sort of pattern. There isn't. The income test was at 100% at one point. It turned to 50%. It was abolished
The acid test was abolished under Whitlam in the 70s, reintroduced, and it's gone all over the place. Internationally, this is partly sort of reflects what David Knox showed something about it yesterday. We've got quite a not altogether different income test to other countries, although it kicks in at higher earnings, which makes it quite generous. This is from a paper by Raf Charmick and John Piggott and their colleagues from CPAR at UNSW. What's interesting is that's the acid test. So we are quite unusual in the acid test in terms of its impact. Now, in this paper, the Department of Social Services did set out these six criteria for evaluation, and we agree with the criteria, actually. Neutrality should not particularly advantage particular assets or products. This would be equity, treat people with similar means equally, less income support for those with greater capacity to support themselves. So the equity, traditionally valued as horizontal equity, like people should be treated alike. Vertical equity is that if there are differences between people, that the differences should be in treatment should be proportional to the differences in people. Which one of the consequences of that is that vertical equity means, I think, that marginal tax rates or marginal EMTRs should always increase with income. They should. That's the marginal tax rate is how you determine vertical equity. Resilience, integrity, avoid gaming the system to get more pension. Fiscal sustainability and simplicity. What we'd like to show you that none of these are met remotely. So, housing. The difference in treatment of the principal residents is egregiously inequitable. All right, so you can have, so my example is, my son and his middle son and his three kids live in an apartment with for which he's paying $36,000 a year, which amounts to something like half his disposable income, and paying something in the order of $15,000 or $18,000 in tax. But a bit more because he's paying the, hex debt, still got to go. Next to them is a lady in a $3 million house who is funded by his tax. And has her $20,000 plus another $300,000 or $150,000. So she has an income. She has as much to spend as the little family has. And that's fair. My wife accuses me of making my sons angry. okay. Then the weakness, the position of non-homeless not in social housing is dire. The latest statistics, we quote in the paper, show that 90% of rents, 3 years ago, 90% of rents in New South Wales were over $10,000 a year, and we pay $3,500 for rental assistance. Now, you don't have to pay, I don't think rental assistance should cover the entire rent, because obviously homeowners have got the maintenance costs, but allowing for that, I think doubling this is an obvious policy proposal that it just has to be done. Apparently, there's a bit of a debate within government because if that is doubled, the Commonwealth government will be paying extra money to the states because the social housing, they will get it through the social housing rent. But I'm sure they can sort that out. And really do. This is huge. There's homelessness happening in growing numbers. It's a shocker. I think I've... 8 reports and reviews on this matter over the last 15 years have recommended including the home in the acid test. Michael Rice, David Knox, and John and I sort of independently have come to the conclusion we should do it. It is so obvious, and it's really a real tragedy that the politicians, not least because of the difficulty of the bickering that goes on between the parties, have actually not got down to doing this, which would then allow some of the other problems to be addressed. Very good that the pension loan scheme has been expanded already to non-pensioners. Was our recommendation, but came in the budget, and I think that's a good step forward. Okay. Age pension and compulsory super are two key pillars, but because of the high
effective marginal tax rates, there's strong incentives to adopt a variety of financial strategies. This is the question of robustness and not gaming the system. There's a lot of opportunity to game the system. And I'll show you the two graphs now that we've developed. This is first the asset test trough. So this is assuming that you don't consume your assets. You just live off the investment income. And I've got the two figures. If you this is assessable assets. So you hit the minimum here and you hit the maximum here. And this is your annual income. The age pension, if you have those assessable assets, drops off in this way. And then you can obviously add the income from your assets. So if you can earn 3% real, you get this trough. And if you get the 5% real income, which is probably not possible, you have this trough. So if you have $300,000 in assets, you can end up with $33,000, $34,000 a year to spend. If, however, you have 500,000 assets, you can only have $28,000 to spend. So you're actually worse off as a consequence of saving more. Now that just cannot possibly meet any sensible standards on that score. So the question is, well, all right, but you've got assets, so you should spend them down. Okay, well, obviously this is what people do, and the research we've shown that people on the asset test taper spend 10% more of their assets, do spend 10% of their assets each year to get out of it, which is why, in fact, many people, I reckon about half the people who should be on the asset test taper are actually on the asset test taper because they've manipulated their way around it. So the alternative approaches, we've got five here. The minimum drawdown, spend this, well, in fact, I'll just do the graph because this is, sort of shows it. So this is before the proposed changes to the asset test. So the minimum drawdown is what we know about 30% of people, from the work that we've done with the five or six funds from Strategic Insights, which I'll be reporting on at 2 o'clock, we know about 30% of the people take the minimum. And you then end up, this is, I can't see myself, you'd end up with about $28,000 here. That's right, $28,000. This is if you're at the top end of the asset test. You'd end up with taking this jagged line, the Christmas tree line that we all know about. A better strategy, actually, is to give away the money, give away the bit subject to the asset test 5 years before you qualify for the pension. Because your children, I mean, after all, if you care for your children, they need to get to housing and all sorts of things, you give away the money, a couple of $100,000, and then you start off at this level. So you're better off by giving away the money, and you're better off until you're about 74. And thereafter, you end up with another sort of Christmas tree picture. The alternative strategy, which I think some people follow, is to take the comfortable living standard, the sort of currently, 44,000 here, which is this yellow line, which means you can keep that till about 81, and then you're drop down. That may well be a sensible strategy under these in current circumstances, because we know, as the Milliman people have discovered, and Jeff will be talking about this afternoon, that expenditure does decline over time, although these are averages, obviously not showing volatility. The alternative is to take an annuity, which gives you this dotted line, or, because that doesn't make sense at all, because your income goes up as you get your first 10 years, you put a small amount into a account-based pension, which you draw down quickly, and that gives you this black line here. So that's the benefit of some sort of annuitization. You've got to work quite hard to get to that point of level consumption. That was the old rules. The new rules, as proposed in the latest, the 60% asset test, 60% income test, will produce a line a little bit lower for people on this level, because the asset test taper goes up. The asset test applies to the higher level effectively. You could actually get a level annuity over a lifetime, which gives you much, much more money now and less less later. So there are ways around it, but it's really, really complicated. And what we need to do is move to a simpler system that's less unfair to those who don't haven't the courage to spend down their assets. So these are the EMTRs based on this. On this, if you give away, if you spend the system minimum, you have an EMTR for the asset test range of 66%. If you give it away, only 2%. I don't know how. Because the income test hits you a little bit. If you maintain a comfortable lifestyle, 52%, and if you purchase the annuity, 45%. These are taking into account the fact that some of the money will. You're taking into account the fact that your children will get, there will be a bequest if you don't take an annuity. And this, now we move on to back to John, and now he'll explain how he's done a different, taken a different slice of the EMTRs.
Yep. Actually, if we just go back to Anthony's slide for a second. Those EMTRs are based on the difference between assets at age pension eligibility age of the maximum of the asset testing range compared to assets at the minimum of the asset testing range. But I think it's worthwhile also to look at smaller tranches of assets. And one reason why I think it's worthwhile to do that is, for example, like we're talking in one of the sessions yesterday about SIPPers, and we're talking about funds developing either one SIPPer or three SIPPers. And if they develop three SIPPers, one might be for those people whose assets going into retirement are below the asset testing range, and one might be for those who are in the asset testing range, and one might be for those who are above the asset testing range. But I think it's more complicated than that. And to show you that that is the case, let me show you the additional calculations that we've done. So what we did is we sort of started with calculations for singles. This slide is for singles. There's singles there and couples there. And we said, okay, well, let's look at 100,000 of assets in excess of the lower asset testing threshold. So we're looking at having an additional 100,000 compared to having 253,000. And then we looked also at, okay, well, now, if we've got 353,000, what about the additional 100,000 there? What impact does that have on the lifetime present value of age pension we receive? And similarly, we said, okay, well, what about 453,000? What if we had an extra 100,000? So basically, we're subdividing Anthony's calculations into three ranges, the lower third of the asset testing range, the middle third, and the upper third. And then after we'd done that, Anthony said, well, you know, what about the ranges above the asset testing range? And I said, okay, let's run those calculations as well. And we've done that. So we've looked at, 553 is the top of the asset testing range for a single. But we've also looked at, well, what happens if you have an extra 100,000 relative to your 553? We've looked at what happens if you've got an extra 100,000 relative to 653. And what happens if you've got an extra 100,000 relative to your 753? And we've done the corresponding thing for couples. So we've sort of tested. We're saying, okay, you get an extra 100,000 here. How much is going to be taken or given back to the government in terms of age pension forgone? And we've done that for the three ranges within the asset testing range, and then we've done it for three ranges of the same size above the asset testing range. And this is what we found out. So we've done the calculations separately for males and females. We've done them separately for different drawdown strategies, and we've done them separately for different assumed rates of future return. But let me show you how those results turn out. So what we're looking at here is we're looking at the amount of age pension lost if instead of 253,000 as a single, you went into retirement. This chart is all for singles, by the way. It's all for singles. So if instead of 253,000, you went into retirement with 353,000, and effectively you can see there that basically you'll lose slightly more than 30% of that extra amount. And that's in this case, which has got the lowest real earnings rate. So that's assuming 1% real earnings. And you can basically hardly distinguish there between the female and the male curve. So there's not much impact from gender. The other really important thing I forgot to mention is that this chart is for those who decide to spend down their assets as per the SIS minimum. So people are spending 5% of their assets from age 65 to 74, then 6% from ages 75 to 79. So they're following the SIS minimum, which is a reasonable thing to do, and it's also something that we find a lot of pensioners in actual practice do. So people who are expecting to earn 1%, which must mean you're following a pretty conservative strategy, are losing in excess of 30% of their additional 100,000 in assets in age pension foregone. People who are earning 3% real are losing about $45,000 of that $100,000 extra that they've accumulated at age pension eligibility age. And people who are earning 5% real on their assets are losing something like 75%, and roughly the same for males and females. So if as a single you were projected to have $453,000 in assets at retirement, and you've worked extra hard and you've done something and something and something, instead of having 453, you've got 553,000. Well done on accumulating that extra 100,000, but $75,000 of that is effectively going to be lost over the course of your lifetime to the government by way of age pension foregone. And that's not even the worst situation. The worst situations come up here. So these are for 5% real return. And here the male and the female curve do show a slight difference. The female curve is slightly worse because of the female longer life expectancy. But in these cases, so from 353,000 to 453,000 and 453,000 to 553,000, females would have been better off without that extra 100,000. Without the extra 200,000, because for that extra 200,000, they lose, I think, $217,000 in age pension foregone. So, to be honest, I think that's a really ridiculous situation, and it obviously is giving wrong incentives to people. And the wrong incentives to people are both at the saving stage. Now, they may not be aware of it. I suspect they're not aware of it at saving stage. But by the time they get to retirement or pre-retirement, at least a minority of people are starting to talk to financial planners. And the financial planners are going to wise them up about what's going to happen to them if they take different amounts of assets into age pension eligibility age. In the paper, we've got a paper as well as a presentation, and in the paper you'll find a lot of detail about the marginal tax rates for all sorts of different levels of assets and for all sorts of different strategies, both for singles and couples. So you can take a look at it and sort of see what that implies for all sorts of different situations in the paper itself, which is on the Institute's website. But what are the consequences? What are the consequences of having such high effective marginal tax rates in terms of the implications on age pension foregone in some of those situations? Well, you know, firstly, it seems like if people were aware of it, it would be a huge disincentive to accumulate extra assets if you're in those asset bands. So if you're already in the bottom of the age pension range, or, you know, if your projected retirement at age pension eligibility age was already going to be in the bottom of the age, the bottom of the asset testing range, then the value in accumulating additional assets to put you towards the top of the range is very, very, very limited. So you'd have to think, well, you know, what's the point? And also, as a pre-retiree, there are huge incentives to do a variety of strategies which are going to give you more age pension, which I would seriously question whether they're in the national interest. So, for example, there are huge incentives to spend down faster. There are huge incentives to renovate your house, at least for as long as the principal residence lies outside the asset test. And there are massive incentives to give money away to your heirs or your children. So, and those sorts of things are going to have an impact on consumption and on asset prices. I mean, conceivably, that could be one of the reasons why people, you know, elderly people, you know, aged 65 or even older, in massive four-bedroom houses, don't want to move out, because if they move out of their house, they're going to lose $20,000, $22,000 in their age pension benefit. So it's just a distorting factor that surely we should be able to avoid. And finally, of course, what's already happening is because people are doing that, the government liability to pay future age pension is not going to diminish as quickly as if people, you know, naively and ignorantly just allowed their assets to accumulate, didn't take any of those strategies, and then suddenly they're on, first of all, over time they move from no pension to partial, from full pension to partial pension to no pension at all. That's going to happen much more slowly than what the government predicts. I think during Michael Rice's session yesterday, he was asked something about that. He was asked about the behavioural impacts of the very high effective marginal tax rates. And he said, well, there's not much impact of this happening. It's only anecdotal. So while partly I've heard a fair bit of anecdotal evidence, and there's also the comment that Anthony made before about you know, his observation that actually more people are receiving more age pension than you would have expected given the assets and income of people going into retirement. So there's probably some academic and sound evidence as well as the anecdotal evidence.
Dixon's comment.
I've attempted to evaluate the means testing approach against the criteria. I think it's quite hard actually, because it's such a complicated structure. Neutrality, is it neutral to give to treat an account-based pension, which someone is running down by drawing down at the minimum rate, the SIS minimum rate, is it neutral to count 100 cents in the dollar of that as assets against the age pension while you're only counting 60 cents in the dollar of an annuity? I don't know. I mean, on the face of it, it would look like the answer to that question is no. But then on the other hand, you've got the problem that if somebody's got an account-based pension, they could reorganise their affairs dramatically so as to obtain the full age pension by doing one of the strategies that I talked about in the previous slide. So I don't know whether it's neutral or not. Equity, I think we talked about before, in terms of particularly the treatment of home ownership. Resilience, I don't know. I mean, when I drafted that slide before, I gave it a tick. That was before we came up with the 60% factor that applied to annuities. So, where did that come from? So maybe I'll put a question mark there really for resilience. Integrity, I don't think so, because planners and their clients everywhere are going to be scheming to get around the tests. Fiscal sustainability, it's the taxpayer that pays for the results of those people scheming to get better results from their age pension. And simplicity, I think it's going to be diabolically hard. Anthony already made the point that that's really, really difficult to come up with a way. You've got to work out, even if you bought a level pension, a level annuity, you've still got to have your age-based pension to levelise the payments for the first 10 or 15 years. So it's really, really difficult to figure out how to get a level income. So, we can't give the current means testing system a tick for simplicity. Okay, so what would we do about it? Certainly, one of the issues, the very, very high effective marginal tax rates might be ameliorated if we went back to the 3.9% a taper rate inside the assets test that we had before the 1st of January 2017. I probably can't see that happening now. Alternatively, we could abolish the income test completely and convert superannuation balances to imputed income, either using age-specific annuity factors. We could treat financial assets that way. We could use age-specific annuity factors to convert an asset to an income, and then abolish the income test entirely, but just apply the annuity the income test to income, including annuity income from financial assets. And the value of principal residence could either be annuitized or rent could be imputed to get around the lack of equity in terms of the current treatment of principal residence. Introducing changes is going to require rational thinking, informed expert discussion, political courage, and in a way, it's probably hard to see how all of that is going to happen, given Anthony's comments earlier about sniping from one party to the other, unless you had a bipartisan approach.
Okay. Some scary numbers in there. So now we'll take questions from the floor. And can you please come to the microphone with any questions? But Dorothy Dixer, and actually it's not really a Dorothy Dixer, it's a question on notice for John. So I forgot to mention before, John has recently written a book about personal financial retirement strategies. So John, as a financial advisor, they now have a best interest duty for their customers. Trustees also have a fiduciary duty to act in best interest. How can trustees and advisors recommend putting additional contributions into super when there's an effective marginal tax rate of up to 100% or more?
Look, I... Honestly, I think it's really hard. I saw a blog post from a Melbourne-based actuary who has fairly conservative-based views, and he was very hostile towards our compulsory superannuation system. And I was thinking, oh, my goodness, why would you be so critical? People seem to think that our super system is, you know, one of the best in the world. But when you're forcing people to contribute money, now this really does depend on where people sit relative to the age pension means testing. Like if you sit below here, it doesn't matter, you're getting full value for your money. And if you sit comfortably above the top of the age testing range, also it doesn't matter, you're getting full value for your money and you're probably getting a really good deal from a taxation perspective as well. But for people here, I completely agree, Darren. I think that forcing people to put salary away into something which is going to become an asset, which is then going to reduce your age pension entitlements, I think that's a tough call, and I'm not sure that people have really woken up to that.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
No hyperbole.
I think in that latter question, your question was, but if assumes that you're not going to save, that you'll spend the money, because it doesn't really matter whether you save it in the super system or save it elsewhere, it's still going to get sucked up into an assets test somewhere. But I'm slightly surprised, John, that you think, or I don't think you think this is novel, but really this was right at the advent of the sort of award super, you know, that started off, that it was always going to hurt the people in the middle because they were saving and disadvantaging their age pension. What you've done is beautifully quantified for us, but it's always been like that, has it not? It's not, this is not new, or have I missed something in the process?
For me, it's the shock of seeing that some of those marginal tax rates are at or in excess of 100%. That's really changed my mind about that, or had a big impact on me.
But it was always so.
Look, it was always so. It was always so that building assets
meant that for people within that range, there would be a reduction of age pension entitlement, correct? Yeah. Yep.
Can you pop that slide back up that was...
No, back one, I think. Yeah, that one. So, given that this is the system that we've got, I think there's been a few of us over the years that have done various bits of work that Darren, I think Nick's done it, I've done some, John, you've obviously delved into this particularly deeply now, but some of the early work was sort of fairly obviously saying, well, look, identifying the value of the put option essentially around the age pension, and if you've qualified for a full age pension, actually might suggest that one could afford to invest more riskily than one might otherwise seek to do because of the benefit of the put protection. But I look at that, and if I look at that sort of 353 to 453, particularly, well, it's males and females, is that saying that, is there a big issue for advisors then about investing more aggressively at those sorts of balances? Shouldn't one be investing more conservatively then, because you're taking investment risk in pursuit of that higher return, but actually you're paying away the benefit of it through a much higher effective marginal tax rate. So this is the system we've got. If advisors are living within it, kind of leaves me wondering whether advisors need to be very careful about the riskiness of asset strategies that they might be putting their clients into, particularly in that kind of that hotspot range, John, that you're referring to.
I think the bizarre thing about investing in volatile assets is that if you invest in volatile assets, you might well hope that the market value goes down and the income goes up. Because if the market value goes down, if the market value goes down, then that will be factored into the impact via the assets test, and you'll get more age pension. And if the income goes up, you get more money from the dividend. So I haven't really thought through, the impact of that on that curve on asset allocation. Yeah, but certainly there's some very bizarre impacts from the way the means tests work.
Yeah, so some of my colleagues have done some work on the effect of on your optimal equity allocation, and clearly if you're up at this end, the age pension absorbs your losses, so it pays you to take a very aggressive stance. But if you're this end, you might come up below, you go up to the end. In fact, you take a more conservative stance because, if you're below, very effectively below here, there's no point in earning more money. So if you're just below the limits, take a very conservative stance because, so it does distort, not hugely actually, but there is a distortion. Can I just respond to Ray's question? I mean, my original graph, I did hope to find some utopia in the past where we actually got this thing right, and it doesn't look as though it was the case, but I think it's always been wrong, and I think it undermines social cohesion, it undermines people's social security, feeling of security, financial security. It's not fair, and we really do need to address it, and address it hopefully once for all, which needs the bipartisan approach.
Just when people go off unemployment benefits into employment, you have the same.
That's quite an interesting debate. I think the different approach is justified at that level because there's a sort of desire to work and you've got future income and all the rest, while certainly for pensioners there's no future income, so it's problematic.
I think David has a question here.
Gee, I'd just like to congratulate you both. That was a fantastic presentation and really blew my mind away. Just didn't realise this sort of thing was going on. But really, I think it's convincing politicians, isn't it? My wife's sister, man's moved in with her and he gave all his assets away to his children. I thought, what a bastard of an act. He's going to live off my wife's sister. But now I understand why he did it. But I just wonder Anthony, the next thing we should do, isn't it, a projection of the age pension costs into the future as if nothing changes, and then if they change the way you guys have suggested here. I guess there'd be a behavioural change, isn't it? To what extent do people give away their assets in this range? And well, he knew, and I'm pretty sure he didn't even find a financial advisor. But isn't this the next stage of this? We need to prove it to politicians beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is impacting and is costing us taxpayers money.
It's a huge surprise to me that when the budget announced the change in the taper rate a couple of years ago, there wasn't an uproar, because it had such a significant impact.
Wasn't it just restoring it to what it was in the...
It was, but I guess if you were planning on a particular taper rate, it made a big impact. And if we'd had benefit projections that included the age pension and the assets test, it would have been clear to members, and I think there would have been more political outrage at the time, but we didn't. And I suspect very few people actually understand it.
But, there was an uproar at the time, but... at the older ages rather than the middle ages.
Yeah.
And I suspect also that relative to 10 years before, there's more people that the taper's over now because of SG maturing. So it's a big issue now that Dr. Small's been very challenging back then.
Okay, look, I think... That has been, it's an outstanding paper, and I encourage you to read it, but a fantastic session. So please thank David and Anthony. John and Anthony. We thank David as well. And please give your feedback.